Good morning and welcome to Words That Matter Modern Day Book Club. I'm your host, Lee Smith. I'm very excited about today's guest. She's written a brand new book. It's terrifically important. And we have her early, very early on to speak about her book because it's just out. And she's speaking about one of the topics that's really cuts to the core of what's going on in American society today. Everything from why aren't adults protecting younger people? Why is our medical profession irresponsible? Why are actual lunatics running the asylum and hurting people and hurting the country as a whole? The subject is the transgender agenda, transgender movement, I guess is probably a better way to put it. But we're going to talk to someone who's been looking at this for quite a while. And the title of her book is D-Trans, True Stories of Escaping the Gender Ideology Cult. Welcome, please, Mary Margaret Olahan. Mary Margaret, thank you so much for being with us here today on Words That Matter.
Thanks so much for having me.
Well, again, congratulations on the book. It's really interesting because you're doing something very important. It's not a polemical argument. You're not just speaking with important medical professionals or people of a political position, but you're speaking to people who have gone through this, who have gone through what's happening. So, if you can explain first of all what got you interested in this subject, and then how you went about reporting it and writing it.
Well, yeah, so I've been interested in culture wars, gender ideology for a good bit now, and I've been reporting on these things for about 5 years as a reporter, whether at the Daily Signal, Daily Wire, Daily Caller, all the different places that I've worked. It's just been a passion of mine. And as I was reporting on the culture wars, I started noticing that this nebulous phrase, gender-affirming care, kept popping up. And one of my editors a couple years ago, we put our heads together and he said, why don't you do a story on gender-affirming care and what it actually means? Because at the time, we didn't really know what it meant, but we kept seeing it used places and it was very, you know, nebulous. And it was pretty clear it was a euphemism, but we weren't sure what it was for. And so I did a deep dive at the time. And our story showed that gender-affirming care meant transgender surgeries, hormones, and puberty blockers, even when we're talking about kids. And I mean, at this point in the game, we know that, right? Like that's fairly common knowledge to those of us who are paying attention to gender ideology. But at the time, it was kind of wild because we knew that they were pushing these types of transition procedures for adults. We weren't totally sure that they were pushing them for young people. And so after I did that story, I really started zeroing in on instances where young people had been affected because I noticed that establishment media, such as the New York Times, loved to say that kids weren't being transitioned. You know, they would pretend that that was an outlier. It was just an extreme case that Republicans were pushing, et cetera, et cetera. And so I started looking around for stories of detransitioners. And once I found one, then I started finding so many, especially people on social media, because over the past 5 years or so, there's been this slowly but surely growing movement of people speaking out about regretting their transition procedures. And so a lot of these people were starting to speak up on Twitter, which is where I found many of them. And there was one night where I tuned into a Twitter Spaces event, and it was just a whole bunch of people who had tried to transition and were talking about their experiences. And I vividly remember this because I was making myself dinner, and I was so fascinated that I was forgetting to eat. These people were telling these stories. It bordered on sci-fi, the way their bodies had been affected by hormones. Their voices were changed. You know, one person would speak and I would think it was a guy, and it turned out it was a girl whose voice had been permanently altered by testosterone. And the stories they were telling were so sad, but also so important and moving that I thought, I got to come back to this. So when I had an opportunity a couple of years down the road to write a book, I said, I want to write it on detransition. That's what I want to do.
Let me ask, what percent of young people, let's say young people, what percent of people who go through this process at a later date say, you know, that was a mistake. I was in the middle of a social contagion, or I wasn't doing very well emotionally, psychologically. How many people are there who say, okay, this was a bad idea, I'm going to detrans? Do we have a good sense of that now?
We don't have a good sense of that. And one big reason is that a huge number of detransitioners don't tell their doctors that they're actually detransitioning. So Lisa Littman is a researcher who did an amazing study several years ago. That study found that only about 24% of detransitioners actually went back to their doctors and told them that they detransitioned. And that's wild, because that's a very low number. But at the end of the day, when you think about what they have been through, these are people who, let's say, you know, a 16-year-old girl who has undergone an attempted gender transition. She's gone on testosterone for years and got a double mastectomy, and then realizes that this was a mistake, that she can't actually become another gender. To go back to her doctor and tell the doctor that this was all a mistake is kind of akin to going back to an abuser that has hurt you very much and saying, hey, you abused me and I didn't like it, and I'm just letting you know that I'm done with you abusing me. I just want you to know that I didn't like how you abused me. It's a very similar situation, where these doctors told these young people that they would be happier and that their mental health would improve and that they wouldn't commit suicide if they went through these procedures. And yet the young person is realizing that could not be further from the truth. They are not happier or better.
I'm surprised by the number that it's 24%, actually, because it seems fairly high. Because the way that I would understand that context is, no, if you go back and speak to the person who did this, that person has a stake in making and you not detransing. They don't have a stake in trying to help you now, because they didn't try to help you at that point. So what do the people and your book is overwhelmingly about young people, right? So you're not speaking to the Rachel Levine types, the Caitlyn Jenner types, middle-aged men, often in late middle age, who go and decide that believe that they're a woman. You're talking about young people, and I believe that you're talking mostly about young women who transition to men. Actually, let me ask: do young women, do girls and young women who transition to males, do they detrans more than young boys or young men who transition to females?
Well, the young women who transition or attempt to transition, because we know you can't actually become another gender, they do experience a whole range of side effects from the testosterone that are horrific and hard to recover from. And I will say the young men who try and transition as well, experience a lot of side effects from the estrogen. So I wouldn't say that one experiences more than the other. They're just different. The girls, for example, when they begin taking testosterone, there's a little bit of a honeymoon period where they feel really good. And this is sometimes because they've been on puberty blockers before. So they just don't really have any hormones in their body. And so when they begin taking testosterone, there's just a rush of hormones and they feel really good and energetic. And, you know, they assume that's because they're, you know, becoming a boy and they're feeling better. And then once the testosterone begins to kick in, they told me that their skin would become coarser, that they would lose hair in certain areas, like in hair on their head. And then they would grow hair in other areas that they weren't expecting. They said that their muscle density changed, their bone structure or their bone density changed, their fat distributed differently. You know, whereas women carry weight usually more in their hips, they might begin to carry it more in their stomach or in their legs. And they've experienced a lot of physical side effects like this, which would also come back to haunt them later, giving them really serious back aches or neck aches or just feeling like their shoulders were too heavy for them because the bones had changed. And then they also experience a lot of mental side effects. So, for example, Helena, one of the girls in my book, told me that she experienced such extreme rage that her father would have her go out and chop wood to try and get some of that pent up aggression out. They also told me they felt increased sexual urges like they had never felt before. One girl said it felt like probably what it felt like to be a young boy going through puberty. But then they also compared it to what it must have felt like to go through menopause, in the mood swings and the intense hormonal rushes that they would have. So all in all, they're just experiencing this whirlwind of hormones and emotions and anxieties and physical side effects. And usually these young people don't feel better from taking the testosterone, you know, after that honeymoon period is over. And so they're looking for the next thing that will make them feel better. And what they're told is that surgery, the next step in their so-called gender journey, which is what the doctors and therapists call it.
I mean, my understanding is that taking the hormones is debilitating enough, right? Because if we're talking about people detransing, my understanding is that these hormones can often affect a permanent damage. Of course, the operations are really bad. Mastectomies, removal of genitalia and mutilation. Of course, is mutilation. But that even the hormones can cause permanent damage. Is that accurate?
It is accurate. We do know people who have suffered a loss of fertility from taking the hormones. One of the biggest scandals in this whole thing is that the hormones are experimental. So we don't fully know their impacts. We do know some of the devastating consequences they've had, but we don't fully know what else they could do. And as the recent expose of the WPATH file shows, the World Professional Transgender Health Association, the doctors who were involved in this organization were aware that some of the testosterone supplements that they're being giving, some of the testosterone hormones they're giving to girls were causing tumors. They were also aware that the young patients couldn't fully informed consent to these procedures since they were struggling from severe mental health issues. And they were aware that some patients were losing their fertility when they were taking testosterone. And yet none of them talked about this. And to the world, what they're saying is gender-affirming care is vital for the safety and well-being of young people. And denying this care to them is crucial, is dangerous, and is going to hurt them. And that's the messaging that we hear from the Biden White House, from the Department of Health and Human Services. That's the messaging we hear from the Department of Education, from all major medical organizations, which cite WPATH's expertise, even though WPATH is internally acknowledging that these types of things are experimental. And so that's the situation that we're in right now, which is incredibly scary and disturbing when these very experimental procedures are being touted as the life-saving force for so-called trans youth. When in reality, many of these young people, if they were just given an opportunity to grow and to relax and to work on their mental health, would very quickly desist. And they're not being given that opportunity. They're being rushed down the path to transition, and they and their families are suffering the consequences.
Mary Margaret, this is such an important story you're telling, that your book tells, D-Trans, True Stories of Escaping the Gender Ideology Cult. When we come back, we have to take a short break right now for people who are watching on YouTube. If you're watching on YouTube, please make sure and come back with us. Make the jump exclusively to Epoch TV. And Mary Margaret, I'd like to pick it up on what happened to the medical profession, what happened to the media, what happened to the Biden White House, that everyone came to agree on this concept that you're talking about, gender-affirming care, and the amount of damage it's created for young people, the way it's destroyed families, the way it's ruined entire communities, and people just came to terms, people just came to agreement on this profound and extremely dangerous lie. So I want to know, when we come back, how did this come about? In the meantime, we're going to take a quick break. Make sure you make the jump with us and come on back for a great discussion with Mary Margaret Olihan. See you in less than a minute.
This problem of bureaucrats out of control certainly predates Donald Trump, but it did reach a new level with Donald Trump for a few reasons. One is that he was so unpopular with the career bureaucrats. You know, 95% of all contributions from federal employees in 2016 go to the Democratic Party.
So now he's in a city where the bureaucracy overwhelmingly voted against him. So he has the bureaucrats against him, the news media against him.
You also see collusion between bureaucrats and the media moving up to a new level. Some of the country moving further to the left in terms of the intelligentsia. And I blame a lot of this on our colleges because they have taken over by radicals in the last 50 years. And so things that used to be just sort of the far left academic loony left are now, have now come to the mainstream.
Our great guest today is Mark Moyer. We're here to speak about, among other things, his new book. And the title of that new book is Masters of Corruption, How the Federal Bureaucracy Sabotaged the Trump Presidency. You may or may not be surprised to see, to find out one of the sources of the great Mark Moyer's conservatism. So make sure you make the jump. Welcome back to Words That Matter, a modern-day book club. I'm your host, Lee Smith. We're speaking with author Mary Margaret Olohan, author of a new book, D-Trans, True Stories of Escaping the Gender Ideology Cult. And before we went to the break, Mary Margaret, I wanted to know, lots of people want to know how this became the what started you off on your path to write this book, which is this whole idea of gender-affirming care. So how did the medical profession... how did the educational profession too, because we know a lot of teachers have been pushing this on kids in school as well. The certainly the large parts of the Democratic Party establishment, as well as the media, how did they all come to agree that, yes, gender-affirming care, what you describe as immensely dangerous set of ideas and later medical interventions, that this is okay, this is good for young people. How did we get to where we are?
Yeah, it's a great question. And we really have gotten to the point where everything seems to be inundated with gender ideology, whether it's, you know, our defense contractors or our Department of Education, the Health and Human Services, all of these places are just inundated with gender ideology. And I think the huge part of it is that these activist groups that are pushing this type of thing have really got their claws in when it comes to corporations. And a good example is the Human Rights Campaign. They have an index where they judge both medical organizations and corporations. And what they'll do is on the Human Rights Campaign's Corporate Equality Index, they'll rank companies or corporations based on how inclusive they are and how willing they are to push things like DEI or gender ideology. And so that's why you'll see all these big corporations that we all know and love, like Coca-Cola, Nike, all of these big shoe brands or all the big clothing brands pushing gender ideology, or even, you know, big finance companies, things like that. And they will all be trying to meet the HRC's requirements to get that 100% perfect score on the index. You even see this from places like Fox Corporate. So that's a huge problem. But then in terms of the medical organizations, there's also a index that the HRC puts out for hospitals and medical organizations, which the HRC calls upon to meet the same very radical standards. And so due to mechanisms like this, we're seeing an influx of gender ideology all over our organizations and corporations. And you'll see weird things like a pro-trans initiative at a hospital, a Catholic hospital that you wouldn't expect to see that kind of thing at. Or you'll hear about a Catholic hospital performing trans surgeries or offering those types of procedures. And that's it's problematic on many levels. But I think one thing in particular that we need to be concerned about is our doctors are prioritizing ideology over science. And I think a good example of this is a story that Helena Kirshner, one of the girls in my book, told me. Helena and I were talking actually about a year before I wrote this book. And I asked her to explain to me how she had gotten hormones because she got testosterone while she was in her teens. And what she did was she drove to Chicago, went to a Planned Parenthood, got the hormones very easily same day, and went and picked up her prescription at CVS and got them. And she began taking them, and they were really causing her to suffer mentally and physically. She was just not doing well. And so Helena tells me she checked herself into a Chicago area hospital in hopes of obtaining some kind of relief, looking for help from medical professionals. And when they checked her in, she told them that she was a boy and gave them male pronouns, but they were aware that she was actually a girl and that she had a female body and that she was taking testosterone. But Helena told me they didn't ask her about this testosterone. And what they did was they pretended that she was a boy and that she needed help being treated for mental health issues as a man. So ignoring the fact that she was a woman and that her issues were stemming from testosterone. And that example, I think, is a really good example of how all of this is going on, because she went in there, she had a problem that needed to be fixed. There was a very obvious solution. And instead of actually helping her, they pretended that she was something else and effectively ignored the realities of the situation in favor of ideology. And that is going on all over the country when it comes to gender ideology. And that should scare everyone. That's our doctor choosing not to see what's right in front of them in favor of something fake and pretend and dangerous. And they're the same doctors that we're all dealing with. And that's what's also being pushed in medical schools. It's what our next generation of doctors are learning. And they're also learning, don't speak up or else you'll be canceled.
Look, is there, how much pushback is there right now in terms of young people who have gone through this, including some of the procedures, some of the surgical procedures? How much pushback is there on the medical profession among other industries where people are saying, because I think one of the things that a lot of people are looking for is lawsuits, right? Huge numbers of lawsuits against hospitals, against doctors, against different clinics. So how much pushback is there? Are we seeing, among other things, lots of lawsuits?
We are seeing lawsuits. Harmeet Dhillon is representing Chloe Cole and a bunch of other detransitioners who are suing the medical providers that did this to them. Chloe Cole, for example, is suing her doctors, therapists, and Kaiser Permanente for transitioning her before she was truly able to give informed consent and for lying to her parents and asking them if they'd rather have a dead daughter or a living son.
Right.
So that's her lawsuit. And there's a number of other lawsuits as well. And some of these detransitioners are represented by Campbell Miller Payne, which is a law firm that is representing a whole number of detransitioners. So that's wonderful. And I think those are really important because they name and shame the doctors, the therapists, the medical organizations in a way that we haven't really seen before. Previously, we would, kind of nebulously know that this person was at this hospital. But the naming of the doctors, I think, is crucial because it helps them to realize they cannot operate in the shadows. They will be held accountable for what they're doing to our youth and for the lies that they're spreading. So I think those lawsuits are monumental.
God, and just seeing some of these doctors on social media places advertising that they'll do these surgeries, and they're so ghoulish, their glee with which they express their ambitions and their hopes to mutilate girls and boys. Just really a horrible bunch of people. I got to let you go in one second. Just want to ask one thing. Look, we keep hearing this phrase that you just said. Would you rather have a dead daughter or a living son? Well, that is, again, just so creepy and ghoulish. It sounds like that's something they workshopped, right? That it's something that they came up with in an ad industry. Where did this come from? Where did this, because my understanding is it's not based in fact at all. But so where does this come from?
It's a very manipulative threat that's designed to scare parents into doing what they want. It's designed to scare parents into thinking, oh, my child will kill themselves if I don't allow them to transition and it'll be my fault. And that's the insinuation that the doctors are giving, is that if you don't allow your son or daughter to transition, it will be your fault when they kill themselves. And that is just evil. It frankly is evil that you would say something like that to a parent who loves their child and wants what's best for them and is trusting you, the medical professional, to tell your medical expertise, and instead you're giving them ideological lies.
I mean, it's just terrible. The blackmail, what that does, parents looking to help their kids, and they're confronted with this stuff, and they feel that they're up against the whole world already. I'm sure that lots of our audience has friends or has family members who have been through this. And Mary Margaret, your book is so important because I think it's, look, I asked about what kind of pushback we're seeing, and your book is part of it. There are other authors who are involved in this. As you say, Abigail Schreier, we write about her. You mentioned her work. Your work is so important because I think this has to get out to different families who are looking for guidance, who are looking for people to talk to as well. And Mary Margaret Olohan, God bless you for doing such important work. And really, all of you owe it to yourselves and your larger community and your country to get out there and read this book. So important. D-Trans, True Stories of Escaping the Gender Ideology Cult by Mary Margaret Olohan. Mary Margaret, again, God bless you. Thank you. And viewers, thank you for being here today, too. And we'll see you in the next episode of Words That Matter, a Modern Day Book Club. I'm your host, Lee Smith. The world suffers from lack of faith in a transcendent truth. What did you see in 1992?
The fundamental treason that Julie and Vonda saw was that they had given up on their vocation to tell the truth. What he saw was that people had now corrupted the task of intellectual life by subordinating it to political passion. I was struck by the fact that back there in the 90s, something similar was happening in our culture under the banner of multiculturalism. Of course, what was odd about the ideology of multiculturalism is that it was actually, there's nothing multi about it. It was always a monocultural animus directed against the then dominant culture of the West. The core idea in the treason of the intellectuals is that intellectuals had given up on their commitment to the idea that we are all in this together, that we share a common humanity. You know, you might come from Europe or Asia or Africa or Detroit or wherever, and you might have this particular ethnic background. And those are real differentiating things, males and females and so on. Still, we share a humanity in common that transcends that. And once you give up on that, you have started down the road to a very divisive ideology.